That's Big Brother Thad, as in Jones, Thad Jones, on trumpet, opening up with Midnight Walk. Thad Jones, it happens that this particular album, Midnight Walk, released in 1966, is actually the work of the drummer of the family, Elvin Jones. Thad and Elvin being members of the royal family of jazz, the Jones family out of Detroit. And on this particular album, again, released in 1966, we have Hank Mobley on tenor sax, Abdullah Ibrahim, formerly known as Dollar Brand, from South Africa, on piano, Don Moore on bass, and George Abend on percussion. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Thursday, June 11th, 2015. The fourth installment of this week-long series we've been doing about so-called reform in America. At all these different levels that we're told, reforms are in the making. And we've talked about the fact that it's time to get engaged in this conversation, or to decide that there won't be a conversation and move beyond that point. But we certainly do need to get real about where we are. So it's a kind of reality check that we've been doing here since Monday about just where are we as a society, and are we coming to terms with this reality that we've been existing in for such a long time, the reality of American apartheid. We have an apartheid society, and all of our social systems, our political systems, our economic systems reflect that reality. But we have a decided reluctance, if not outright resistance, refusal to acknowledge this, and beyond that, to do anything about it. Now, for a large segment of America, that really doesn't hurt them. But the irony is that the people, a large segment of America, also engaging in this refusal to acknowledge reality, are the very ones who suffer inordinately from these systems that are designed to snuff them out, to frustrate them, and in the end, you know, on a more esoteric level, we can talk about the aggregate effect being that society as a whole suffers. But my point of contention is, you know, let's get beyond this business whose job it is to fix society. Let's get beyond all of these silly discussions we have and have not been having. Okay. I'm not going to discuss with anyone I'm not going to get into a long, protracted debate with anybody as to whether this is a racist society. I refuse to waste my time. I think, as I said yesterday, we have ample evidence. We have statistics. We have all of the corresponding evidence to suggest that it is completely accurate to make that assertion. This is a racist society. If in 2015, after all these hundreds of years of evidence, people still want to get theoretical and hypothetical about it, go right ahead and waste your time. I mean, you're not going to waste my time. I'm not going to devote one scintilla of a second of time to discussing this, to see whether, in fact, there is truth to this claim. So I am proceeding with this as a given. It is a racist society, has been a racist society, has been organized as a racist society. That, in my book, is a given. I'm not going to discuss whose job it is to fix it, because that, too, it seems to me, is just downright stupid. It's everybody's job to fix it. However, we have ample evidence to suggest that even the victims, and especially the victims of this racist society, have taken on the inordinate burden over hundreds of years to try to fix it by appealing to supposedly higher instincts and appealing to this the expressed desire and the expressed philosophy that undergirds what we call the American culture and democracy, that all people are created equal and whatnot. We've had hundreds of years appealing on these premises for a different tact, a different approach, a different mindset by those in power. It just hasn't worked. So to continue to believe that it is possible that somebody would see the light and this thing will, you know, descend upon them and there will be a kind of a moment in which all things become incredibly clear and they will actually submit to higher ideals and do things different. That's ridiculous to even think about that. You have to be delusional to think that is possible, that will possibly happen. Why? Because, as we have been exploring in the last couple of days, the society, the people who have had control of what we call society, the American nation, and the apparatus of government, they are byproducts of a very sick system themselves. They are sick. If it is just to them that we should have people suffering the way people have suffered and continue to suffer in this country, and they can go to bed and sleep and be at ease at night. And not only that, they have organized systems to defend that, to undergird that, to perpetuate that. You can't but believe that there's something wrong, so deeply wrong here, that it almost tests the human capacity to change it. And in any event, the question becomes, is it the job of oppressed people to fix it? Or are you not understanding that any attempt at all to do this, and I'm saying this now in consideration of what we know to be hundreds of years of evidence that the system is organized this way. That's what they want. That's where they invest even your own tax dollars against you. They invest heavily in maintaining the system. It seems to me that the time is long since gone that people should get real about what it is we are living in and what, therefore, are the priorities here. I'm suggesting the priority number one is survival, which has been the priority of the oppressed peoples of this nation from day one, survival, because they came up against brute force aimed at total annihilation. That's what the record reflects. Annihilation was the order of the day. Genocidal acts in order to wipe out people so that supremacy is assured. And then, you know, they tweaked it a little bit because it really did look very, very savage in the world community of nations, including community of nations, including nations that were said to be very brutal to their own people. By comparison, the United States was just one of the leaders of the pack in terms of this kind of brutal, savage behavior. So they had to tidy things up a little bit. And the cosmetic changes went into effect, and we have, quote, laws, unquote. We have government. We have legislatures. We have social constructs that sound a lot prettier, a lot better, more well-meaning. It takes the edge off of the hard, crude reality that the intent initially was just to wipe people out, install a power elite, replicate that power elite all over the country, provide that power elite the basis for justifying an inhumane and illogical philosophy to maintain themselves in perpetuity in power and control, domination over all others. And of course, when the formula worked so well, to even export it to other places by war, through one-sided trade agreements, through all kinds of subterfuges to cause other governments and other nations to fall under their sway. So if we are thinking that this is just, this thing we call racism is just the spontaneous expression of bad manners on the part of individuals, then we haven't really learned very much over the last hundreds of years. We should by now come to understand the reality as the byproduct of carefully constructed systems. We are enmeshed in those systems and not in a good way, because we still remain, for the most part, targets of it, victims of it. So that racism is really an applied science. If we understand it that way, racism is an applied science. And by that I mean that it takes very seriously the broad view and in a historical perspective. It borrows from history those things that work well and that have yielded results that are confluent with the intention of control and supremacy, and then they apply it as they go along. They perfect and apply, perfect and apply. So that practically nothing that we encounter as vestiges of racism or as racism itself, these are not accidental things. You have to see it as the byproduct of purposeful, intentional action. Now, some people are okay with that, including people in the progressive community. They're very okay with that. Why? Because although philosophically they may have differences of opinions about that, although on a spiritual level they would claim that this is really not a thing that with which they're comfortable, on a visceral level, they're okay with it because it gives them a sense of belonging to the power elite. And that is important in order to provide individuals a sense of power by virtue of their skin color. That's what's happening in the United States. It's been going on for hundreds of years. It is not to be fixed by new laws and new measures, and they'll tweak here and they'll tweak that there, and suddenly we have a great society. All of the evidence, all of these years, has been telling us it is a lie to claim that we actually have a democratic, humane, fair society. We don't. So, again, I don't waste time discussing this question as to whether racism exists. I don't waste time with individuals who want to engage in this thing as a hypothetical discussion. But I do want to talk with people who understand the necessity, the urgency of constructing systems that will help them achieve some very important things. Number one is survival. If you don't survive, then your culture doesn't survive. Those coming behind you don't survive. Survival has been the number one imperative of all oppressed people, especially oppressed people who understand that they are oppressed. I don't waste time with people who don't think that they are oppressed, because I could recognize it immediately. Not because you think you're not oppressed because you have a degree from such and such a college and you drive a Beamer and you live in the suburbs and you have all the trappings of the people who belong to that group that oppresses you, and therefore you believe that you have achieved liberation by proxy, by osmosis. You have attained all of the things that you think would absolve you or differentiate you from the group called the oppressed people. And therefore, these things that we're talking about are irrelevant to your everyday life. I say go right ahead. I have nothing against you for believing that. But I'm still clear that you are oppressed, whether you choose to acknowledge it or not. You are an oppressed person. Because while you think you are liberated, you're psychologically broken. You've fallen for the lie. You have permitted yourself to enter an alternate universe that could change at any time, and you are in no way in charge of when it will change or how it will change. So you're still powerless, even in your alternate life.
You cannot physically change your circumstances. You can't call the shots in your new alternate world. You have no real control over your life. So racism is an applied science. And why do I call it a science? Why do I use the word applied? Because, as I said, it learns, the system learns through experimentation what works and what does not work in service of domination, supremacy, control, utter control, and applies it. It tweaks it now and tweaks it then, but it actually scientifically applies knowledge of supremacy and control that it gains over time. And whenever it applies it, the whole point is that it should yield exactly the same result. That's the scientific part of it. Every time you see the equation for salt, for example, sodium chloride, NaCl, it means that salt, whether it's sea salt or other salt or regular salt, whatever salt, is a combination of two elements in a particular way. Water is a combination of two elements, hydrogen and oxygen, in a specific configuration to produce water. So water all over the world has the same configuration. The business of supremacy has the same configuration no matter where it occurs all over the world. The approaches may differ here and there, but the science of it is there's a science to control. There's a science to supremacy. And it has to do with devising systems, methods of control, devising formulas for control. Now, if you want to, in an unscientific way, go up against scientific formulas, you know you're losing from the word go. You have to battle also on a scientific level. You can't go willy-nilly, blindly into this thing called liberation. You can't affirm your rights. You can't fight a fight without knowing, without the clarity of the reality that you're dealing with and you, where you are on the map. Now, I'm sure you've been in an office building and you press that button for the elevator, and right next to it, there's usually a little map that says, you are here, and put a little arrow to tell you where you are. But the arrow is telling you where you are in relationship to an exit. You are here, big arrow. Now, if for some reason you have to escape or get out of this building, you are here in relationship to the stairwell. You are here in relationship to elevators. You are here in relationship to some point of exit. So two things have to happen at the same time. You have to be aware as to where you are, and you have to be aware as to what is your point of exit from the quagmire that you possibly could be in. But increasingly, there is a sense that we neither have that little arrow that says where we are, we've lost track of that, and we have no idea what is our point of exit. And yet we are in crisis. All around us, crises unfolding and unleashing intolerable levels of pain and suffering and deprivation. We don't have a point to say this is exactly where you are, nor do we have any idea of where is the point of exit. And this is not unique to us. This is what happens when you are an oppressed person. When you belong to that group that doesn't have systems at work, that has no effective leadership, that has arrived at a point where the two things that you really do need to know in life, which is what oppressors know intuitively because they design these systems, they will tell you where you are. They will tell you where you are. They know exactly where you are. They know exactly what your potential point of exit could be, which is why they continue to refine their formulas of control so as to head you off at the pass. They know you better than you know you. So, do we have time to engage in this esoteric discussion? No, because oppression requires you to hunker down and get serious. And we have had more than ample evidence that people who came before us knew this very, very well. And they did their jobs to the very best of their ability. To the very best of their ability. Which is why we, and I as a generation, we owe so many apologies to those who went before us. Because we have punked out big time. We have no guts. Compared to them, we have no stamina. We have no vision. We have no concern even. So effective has this applied science of racism been on us as a whole. Black, white, and polka dot, we all have punked out. The people who will tell you today how concerned they are that the aggregate good is what they support, they're not speaking up in the face of the atrocities that are being occurring right under their own noses. They're not speaking up because it is more important to them, the consciousness of belonging to that group that provides automatic privileges and entitlements to them. That is far more important than even the humanity they profess. So the job to fix oppression ultimately is the duty of the oppressed. Fix your own oppression. Fix it. More than enough time, more than enough space, more than enough room, more than enough opportunity has been available and provided for discourse and for conversations and for action. People don't want to be part of it. That's okay. But you are ultimately responsible for your own agenda. You are ultimately primarily responsible for that. You can't look to people for your salvation. That's not their job. And whether and it may make a lot of people, a lot of black people spend a lot of time blaming white America Look at what they're doing. Look at, oh, geez, that means you don't understand the reality you're living in. Why shouldn't they act like that? And why shouldn't oppressed people act like they are oppressed? There are people who could easily improve their block by getting up in the morning and taking a broom to the sidewalk in front of their house, sweep it, plant some flowers. They wouldn't do that. They could easily fix their educational situation and improve it by deciding that their children are worth fighting for. But they wouldn't do that. They could easily fix things right in their control, and they wouldn't do that. And I'm not blaming you, understand. I'm saying understand and recognize that you're a victim of your own oppression. And you ought to see it as that. You are conditioned by these very sophisticated formulas tested over hundreds of years as to how to control and manage you. And you are going along with the program, which is part of the science of controlling you. You don't even see yourself as being worthy of living in a clean place. You don't see yourself as being worthy of flowers planted on your block. You don't see yourself as being worthy of having your family members being safe in your community. You don't see yourself as worthy as fighting for that. You have bought into the myth of inferiority. You propagate it. You live it every day as planned. So, are you going to break the chain? Are you going to turn things around? Are you going to face up to the reality that you have punked out on many, many levels? You are failing to do even the basics that your forebears understood to be necessary, and what they did every single day in within all of the constraints that they had to deal with in life. They did it. They put up with insults, but they worked every day. They saved a penny here and a penny there. They had a house. It may not have been pretty, but they had it. They had land. They understood these things. You hear basing your entire existence on the false notion that if somehow you fit into the predetermined cog of the wheel designed for you, that you will have achieved a level, a status that would make you immune to suffering, that would give you the privilege of jettisoning yourself out of this status called oppressed. You are an oppressed person. In America, you are an oppressed person. In America, the president is an oppressed man. Now, the last thing he would say is he's an oppressed man, or that his wife and two daughters are oppressed. And he's president of the United States. But we don't need to have a discussion about that, do we? Even at his level, having attained the absolute highest level of achievement in this country, there's no doubt in the mind of any non-comatose person, certainly any non-comatose African-American person, Comatose African-American person that this president is an oppressed man. He's a member of an oppressed class in the White House. This thing is very serious. I'll take a break just about now. And when I come back, I want to talk about once we embrace this reality. We don't have to, this is not to say you condone it and you give up on it. But once we understand it to be what it is, are we ready to move in a different direction? Or do we, as Dr. Amos Wilson reminded us yesterday, are we part of progression, or are we part of regression? That's a question I want to address once we come back, right after the short break. You're listening to PRN.FM, and you're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking about this idea of reforming America. How does it happen? Whose job is it? And do we understand that there are systems at work that we ought to understand is the way things work? We have systems as well, but we are usually not aware of the systems that we ourselves have. And so it is hard to convince people that it is possible to devise systems. They don't see it as being possible because they associate systems with government only. But actually, everybody is part of a system of one sort or another. That's the whole school of thought, actually, behind systems theory. The whole school of thought is that we are all parts of systems. We participate in systems all the time. Some systems are overarching, as we can call a national government. That's an overarching system. The elite are part of a system, but so are we. We are parts of systems ourselves. Sometimes these systems are interlocking. Sometimes these systems function independently. But we have systems. I talked about a system yesterday. The Amish community has a system. And it was born out of a need to address their unique needs. Their culture, as they see it, was a very important thing. Their religious beliefs, their approach to life, their attitude about not being part of the world. They don't want to be part of a world. They see the outside world, but whatever you think about it, but this is their view. The outside world has so much damage that it could do to these very important precepts that they hold dear. So they separate themselves. They're not at war with the world. They're just clear that many things in the world are detrimental to their communal benefit and progress. So they define their community on a whole number of levels. And they organized their system to suit their needs that they share. They're not at war with anybody. They don't use cars, but they're not mad at people who do. They don't use phones, but they're not mad at people who want to. You know, they don't participate in this business, electoral politics and so forth, but they have no problem with other people who want to do that. These things they have determined as a community are not congruent with where they are as a community, how they want to live as a community, and the standards and the practices that are conducive in their view to communal progress. So they organized accordingly. It doesn't matter to them what people think. But they are clear. So the first order of business is clarity. You ought to get some clarity about where you are in the scheme of things. Unfortunately, many of us are not clear as to where we are. So just like that arrow in the building, go in any office building, you'll see one of those maps. Where are you and where is your point of exit? Where is it that you are going to go in a crisis? What do you lean on? How do you determine what is important to you? How do you plan for survival? And on that level, I don't mean, well, survival and, you know, like these reality shows and, you know, they drop you someplace in a forest and you got to figure your way out. Because we know that that's not real. It's real for about, a couple of days. And then you come back and life, it is a brief respite or a brief departure from what you are living as your norm. But what if that was all your life? What if that was all their life? Could they survive that? No. They can take these regular departures and it becomes an interesting exercise. But everybody knows, the producers know and the participants in the program know, that at some point they get to go home and live life as they know it. But what if that experience was life and you didn't know it? You're not prepared to live that kind of life every day. Could you actually say that you could survive that? No. No. So the first point, clarity. We need to have conversations with ourselves and those close to us and those in communities that we believe we are part of. Where exactly are we? In the scheme of things, where do we fit? Do we fit? If we fit, how do we fit? If we don't fit, how don't we fit? But you ought to do some kind of an exercise to figure this out. Are we in the society? Are we Americans? In the sense that, you know, I have to call Americans whenever people get up and they start talking about America in this esoteric, hyperbolic way, as if there is a standard definition, you know. What exactly are you? Do you see yourself as being in charge of every aspect of your life? Do you see that all opportunities are open to you? that you have equal footing, equal standing with everybody else, that this is a truly egalitarian society, and you can maximize your potential like anybody else without hindrance, without suffering all kinds of unnecessary setbacks? Do you see yourself as being completely American with all the ideals that are thrown at us every day? Or does clarity give you a different picture as to where you are, whether you fit in or don't fit in, and how and why if you do, and how and why if you don't? Do you see yourself as being part of this process of reclamation? By that I mean that you see yourself involved in this business of bringing about a new consciousness, as being part of a group of people with a shared sense of self and a shared sense of the future and a shared responsibility to assure survival. And that survival being within the framework of your culture, of your spirituality, of all the things that are important to you. Do you see that? If you see that, how are you fixed to do that job? Are you good with it? Are you at ease with that job? Do you see it as a duty, or do you see it as unimportant, something that really is not part of your mission in life? Do you see yourself as part of a community, or are you into that good old historical American way of rugged individualism, which is contrary to communal progress? Do you see yourself as having anything to contribute? Do you see yourself as needing to prepare yourself to contribute? Is it important to you at all, this whole thing about communal progress rooted in history, rooted in culture, rooted in everything you know that those who went before you valued and used in order to survive so that you can be here? Do you see yourself as having a duty to fulfill your part of the deal in this continuum of survival? Is that important to you? Or is it all about you? What's good for you? What you feel like doing now? What you want to buy? Where you want to live? And the hell with the rest of the world. Have you lost faith? Have you lost confidence in your own capacity to create change? Do you even want to do that? Do you have any desire to do that? Have you opted out? Did you fix yourself? Let's put it that way. Have you fixed yourself? And what do I mean by that? Have you come to your senses as to where you are and what you're doing here And what is your purpose? And how do you execute a plan? Do you have a plan? Is it your individual plan? Is it a plan that involves other people and working to contribute to the aggregate good? Are you about community of any type? Are you just about you? What's important to you? Is humanity important to you? Is survival of people behind you important to you? Is service to others important to you? Is this thing called racism and fighting it and overcoming it for survival, is this important to you? Are you real? Or are you just another phony? Are you play acting? Did you punk out somewhere along the way? Are you punking out now? Do you have what it takes to stay the course? Do you want to? These are the questions that we have to ask ourselves. These are the questions that require clarity in order to answer truthfully to ourselves. But either way, the situation is as it is. The only reason that you'd be asking yourself these questions is to decide whether you're in or not. Your being in and your being not in no way changes the situation, the reality of the situation. It could, it should, but in the end, that is also up to you. I'm only making the case that the situation is so critical that we need just about all hands on deck, but not all, because there are people that we really could live without. We don't need a whole bunch. There's a lot of people we don't need. But we do need those who have answered these questions and have explored these questions and want in. Because all of the people who had suffered before, they weren't on schedule. They weren't on the map. They weren't in the fight. But enough serious and committed and service-minded people were. And that's why we're here today. Our condition, as horrible as it is, would have been even worse had they not committed, had they not prevailed. So I'm asking the questions so that when we engage in a discussion, we don't have to beat around the bush as to, you know, where we stand and all of that stuff. We would have gotten all of that out of the way. And we can now get to the meat of the thing, which is, what is the work that we have to do? What is the work that we are doing? This is the conversation that is long overdue, and I'm just asking us to summon up the bravery to initiate it and to engage each other with it. I want to thank you so much for joining me in these last couple of days that allowed me to stretch out this idea. I've been talking about it in bits and pieces, but it's a good thing to have a steady stream, if you will, in which I'm able to kind of fully present the idea to you that this is very, very important to engage in. Our lives depend on it. we discover that things go in cycles. And at any given point in time, we all occupy two places on two different axes of life. On the horizontal plane of history, we go along with the same rate society is going along. We have no choice. We are affected by it. And then there is the vertical plane. That's our personal plane. We travel up and down on it. We ascend or descend. On the other axis, we just go along. We go along for the ride. We're part of that society. Everybody's going along. And this other plane, however, we get to choose, and to a larger degree, we get to choose whether we ascend or descend on our personal axis. But in life, we can locate ourselves on both axes. As society is going along, where are we? At what point on that axis are we? Are we also going along at the same rate as the rest of society? And on the personal axis, are we ascending or descending? Something to think about. Thank you so much for being with me today. I do appreciate your company. As you know, I say it all the time, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Keep it right here. Coming up next, Expanding Mind. And of course, you know, I value the mind. So we will continue this discussion just again to remind you that we are working very hard to get all of our wiring and innards, the innards of a radio station together, as the move has been accomplished, and we should be engaging in vigorous discussion with each other very soon. So thank you so much for listening, even though we haven't been interacting, but that is just around the corner. Just a little bit more patience as they test and retest all of that wiring. It's a lot of wiring. Thank you. Thank you, and thank you also for your very best thoughts and prayers and wishes as I contend with this challenge in my life. I'm leaning heavily on it, and I am so grateful to be on the receiving end of your best thoughts and wishes. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.